Spring is here, and the WBAI Spring Membership Drive is starting on Monday, April 27th. Once again, we'll be needing your help answering phones and taking pledges of support for your radio station. If you can spare an hour or more any time between the hours of 7 a.m. and 12 midnight, please come to our studios at 505 8th Avenue on the corner of 35th Street on the 19th floor. Before the drive begins, on Wednesday, April 22nd, we'll be having an orientation and training meeting for volunteers to help prepare you for the drive in advance. So please come to our meeting. We look forward to seeing you here at the station on Wednesday, April 22nd at 5:30 p.m., 505 8th Avenue on the 19th floor. And keep listening to WBAI Radio, 99.5 FM in New York. If you're interested in volunteering, please give us a call at 212-279-0707, extension 122. That's 212-279-0707, extension 122.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI in New York. Time is 8 o'clock. It's time for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. Couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. Don't give me bones for the best.
Good evening to everybody. This is Off the Hook, and yes, we're a little bit delayed because, as usual, there are some phone, I guess it's kind of a disagreement between me and the phone, but we'll get into that in just a moment. There's some definite weirdness going on out there. But I don't have to tell you that if you spend your time playing with phones and computers, you'll know that there's always something weird happening, and that's what we're here for, to report on the latest and to trade stories. This is the last show in a few weeks, I think. I know we're not on next week. I know we're not on the week after that, and we haven't gotten word yet as to whether we'll be doing a fundraiser in 3 weeks. I know it would be nice if we knew now. Maybe somebody will come running into the studio to let us know before the end of the show if we can tell people to tune in 3 weeks or in 4 weeks. But we'll know, hopefully, before that happens. Some news updates, and then we have a very exciting demonstration we're going to attempt. Note I say attempt because it doesn't always work. That's the thrill of live radio. Here's a letter we got from somebody who was playing around with the MTV system. He writes, today was the day that MTV was picking their new VJ. For those who don't know, that means video DJ. And I don't know why they don't call it a VDJ. Oh, I do know why they don't call it that. Okay. Oh, it's nice they can just sort of answer your own question while you're asking it. Okay, and I thought, hey, why don't I go over to MTV.com and vote? So I did. And then I thought, that was boring. How about I set it up so my computer votes for me over and over? You know, in the true spirit of democracy there. While getting the source code for the page, I noticed that the numbers for the people being voted for were all the same. Meaning, someone had hacked it and made it so you can only vote for one person. And about an hour later, MTV said, you can no longer vote online. So obviously somebody hacked it and they found out about it. Here's a letter. By the way, that letter came from someone named Overload. Yes, Overload. Thank you very much for sending that in. Another letter to Off the Hook, and this comes from, I believe it's Maine. Yes, Portland, Maine. Just another dorky listener, soon to be Bell Atlantic employee. Yes. I lived in Vermont for 19 years, since I was about 12, and the payphone rates there were a steady 10 cents, which was fine with everyone there. Bell Atlantic comes in, and bam, not 15 cents, not 20 cents, not 25 cents, not 30 cents, 35 cents. 35 cents for a local call. Let's be fair, though, corporations need the money. And this person also writes, there was a pirate radio station that many of us in Portland, Maine listened to, broadcasting on 97.3 FM, which stopped broadcasting fairly suddenly. And the Casco Bay Weekly published an article April 2nd, 1998, claiming that an FCC agent paid them a visit on March 24th. The FCC wouldn't confirm this, but their spokesman said, you have to understand this is kind of formatted weird, so I have to read it very strangely. Their spokesperson said that they can't talk about ongoing enforcement. I have no reason to doubt the report, but I cannot confirm it. That's the usual Fed way of talking. Now, here's an interesting piece that was posted on the Kevin Mitnick mailing list. For those who don't know, the Kevin Mitnick mailing list has been ongoing now for quite some time, and people talk about various things in the news, various ideas as far as what we can do to help Kevin Mitnick out, who's been in prison now for over 3 years with no trial and no bail. And it appears that, the judge in this case, it seems like she has this thing against Kevin. It really, you know, it feels that way, that she just doesn't like him. She doesn't trust him in any sense whatsoever, and she really believes that he needs to be locked away and never let out, or just, you know, locked away until the trial anyway, with absolutely no hope of bail or looking at the evidence if it involves a computer or things like that. In other words, she seems a little clueless as far as how the technology works. You know, somebody can't start a war by using a phone or you know, can't hack the Defense Department by looking at the evidence for his own case. The interesting thing about this is that if you look back, someone actually went back into the Los Angeles Times archives, went to November 22nd, 1995. As an attorney, Marianna Fautzer, I think I'm saying it right, once said that an effective lawyer had to think as deeply and widely as possible about a case. You keep testing to see how far the ripples go. as the federal judge who Monday declared key portions of Proposition 187 unconstitutional. Bowser has set off a shockwave that may well ripple the legal, political, and social fabric of California for years to come. Her bold judicial action, based on her contention that federal authority over immigration supersedes many elements of Proposition 187, dealt a sharp blow to proponents of the popular voter-approved immigration control measure. Now, I find that fascinating, that obviously she's, you know, she's got enough there to realize when something is completely wrong and needs to be you know, corrected, even though it flies in the face of popular sentiment. But I don't know. Where is it when it comes to dealing with matters of technology? This goes to show that we can say, you know, these people are stupid idiots that don't understand anything, but they're not stupid idiots. They're smart people who just don't get it because they've been instructed by the wrong people, because they've had bad experiences in some way. And I think that's the majority of what we wind up facing, are people that are otherwise rather nice, but just don't get it as far as this particular subject matter goes. And that's what our real task is reaching these people somehow, getting through to them, getting them to see. That's part of what the whole Free Kevin campaign is all about. The bumper stickers are being spread around far and near. In fact, there's many different people now making the same bumper stickers, which is really great, because they'll be popping up everywhere. I see them now myself on cars that I did not put on, you know, they're on other people's cars willingly, I assume. So there'll be more information about that on the 2600 website and in the new issue of 2600, which will be out in about 3 weeks. That is the latest on the Kevin Mitnick situation. I believe there's a new trial date, or not trial date, a court date coming up in a couple of weeks. We'll have information on that as soon as we learn what happens. A privacy expert has challenged the U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation to produce evidence of its recent claim that computer-related security breaches have risen by 250% in the last 2 years. The increase in computer attacks was announced about a week and a half ago by Dick Watson, assistant special agent in charge of the White Collar Crime Program at the Secure Enterprise Management Seminar in Boston. Shortly beforehand, the FBI asked the FCC to make it compulsory for computer and telecommunications manufacturers to build wiretapping capability into all of their equipment. Simon Davies, director of Privacy International, said the FBI was crying wolf with its latest figures. Based in London with offices in Washington, D.C., Privacy International is a human rights group formed in 1990 as a watchdog on surveillance by governments and corporations. Davies has accused the agency of overstating the problem to garner support for continuing controls on the export of encryption keys. The FBI statistics have no credibility. Congress makes the mistake of accepting FBI Director Louis Freeh's figures without question. Sound familiar? The problem is Brussels is no better, Davies said, alluding to the European Commission's passing a memo of understanding on encryption control. It's obscene the way these issues are being discussed in a democracy. And, we have someone who just flew in from... Actually, let me get this microphone to turn on. Tell us where you flew in from, because I'm not really sure where you flew in from.
From London.
From London. And your mic still isn't on, so I'm just going to turn them all on. Go ahead.
From London?
From London, okay. Yeah. And you have something to add about the encryption.
Before we get to that, there was an article posted at CNN's website two days ago about how the NSA had organized people to try to break into the Pentagon's computers again to really test the volatility of the system.
Yeah, in fact, that's how my next story here.
How do you think these different government organizations differentiate between people who are not sanctioned to try and hack into the system and the people who do try to hack into the system?
Well, I think they must tell them at some point. They say, oh, you know, those people that were, you know, ping-flooding you before, that was us. That was us at the NSA, you know, trying to get into your system there. But, you know, sometimes I think they might forget to tell them, and then they just blame the hackers for everything else. Or maybe they just keep the total and forget to subtract all the attempts that the NSA makes on their computers. And who knows? But whatever it is, I just don't think the figures are accurate. I never have. I just don't believe these things at face value. I believe they should be questioned. And so now tell us about the encryption.
The British government has had a second reading of a bill for public key encryption. I don't know exactly what the contents of the bill actually says, but there's a weekly email journal called NTK Need to Know, and they've been trying to get people to rouse support around the fact that this is not a good thing for people to have in England. And it's gone for a second reading, which means now it's gone to some kind of committee, and they're supposed to schedule a public hearing about it. But people, and for the vast majority of people who just use the internet in England, they have no idea what this is about.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't understand why it's a significant turn of events for them, or what it could mean to their privacy or their own ability to authenticate themselves.
I'm sure that's the way that the people in charge want it to be.
Could be. Could very well be.
A clueless public is a public that won't cause any problems.
Yeah, that's true.
Except maybe in the bars or something.
You know those English, they have enough, I think, for a couple hundred years or so.
Things are definitely taking some interesting turns, I'll just say that. Okay, computer hackers, this is the story. Computer hackers could disable military system compromise in secret exercise. Senior Pentagon leaders were stunned by a military exercise showing how easy it is for hackers to cripple U.S. military and civilian computer networks, according to new details of the secret exercise. Amazing, you know. This is how easy it is for hackers to do it. The hackers have never done this, but this is how easy it is for them to do it. So next time someone even tries to do anything, people will remember that hackers could cripple the nation's defense. Yeah, using software obtained easily from hacker sites on the internet, a group of National Security Agency officials could have shut down the U.S. electric power grid within days and rendered impotent the command and control elements of the U.S. Pacific Command, said officials familiar with the war game known as Eligible Receiver. The attack was actually run in a two-week period, and the results were frightening, said a defense official involved in the game. This attack, run by a set of people using standard internet techniques, would have basically shut down the command and control capability in the Pacific Theater for some considerable period of time. Pentagon spokesman Kenneth Bacon said Eligible Receiver was an important and revealing exercise that taught us that we must be better organized to deal with potential attacks against our computer systems and information infrastructure. The secret exercise began last June after months of preparation by the NSA computer specialists, who, without warning, targeted computers used by U.S. military forces in the Pacific and in the United States. The game was simple: conduct information warfare attacks, or info war, on the Pacific Command and ultimately force the United States to soften its policies toward the crumbling communist regime in Pyongyang. The hackers posed as paid surrogates for North Korea. The NSA red team of make-believe hackers showed how easy it is for foreign nations to wreak electronic havoc using computers, modems, and software technology widely available on the darker regions of the internet, network scanning software, intrusion tools, and password-breaking login scripts. According to U.S. officials who took part in the exercise, within days, the team of 50 to 75 NSA officials had inflicted crippling damage. They broke into computer networks and gained access to the systems that controlled the electrical power grid for the entire country. If they had wanted to, the hackers could have disabled the grid, leaving the United States in the dark. You know, they say that sentence now, and, you know, they make it seem as if it's, you know, regular hackers again. Before, it was make-believe hackers, showing how easy it was, but now it's the hackers could have disabled the grid. You know, it's just they fall into that pattern.
There was a scene like that from the movie Sneakers.
Uh-huh.
Remember, one of the places that they got into was the National
Park. I'm sure they thought that was playing out right in front of them. Groups of NSA hackers based in Hawaii and other parts of the United States floated effortlessly through global cyberspace. Oh, boy. Breaking into unclassified military computer networks in Hawaii, the headquarters of the U.S. Pacific Command, as well as in Washington, Chicago, St. Louis, and parts of Colorado. The attacks were not actually run against the infrastructure components because we didn't want to do things like shut down the power grid, said a defense official involved in the exercise. But the referees were shown the attacks and shown the structure of the power grid control, and they agreed, yeah, this attack could have shut down the power grid. Knocking out the electrical power throughout the United States was just a sideline for the NSA cyber warriors. I'm having trouble finishing this. Their main target was the U.S. Pacific Command, which is in charge of the 100,000 troops that would be called on to deal with wars in Korea or China. The most telling thing for the Department of Defense, when all was said and done, is that basically for a two-week period, the command and control capability in the Pacific Theater would have been denied by the InfoWar attacks, and that was the period of the exercise. Would have been. Wasn't really, but it could have been. Right. The attackers also foiled virtually all efforts to trace them. FBI agents joined the Pentagon in trying to find the hackers, but for the most part, they failed. I guess they didn't know either, did they? They just were chasing these people that they had no idea who they were. They thought they were hackers. I'll bet they're mad now. Only one of the several NSA groups, a unit based in the United States, was uncovered. The rest operated without being located or identified. So how did they know that there weren't real hackers involved that, you know, during the same period of time? They could just say, oh, the others were never identified. But how did they know if they don't identify them how many there were? The attackers breached the Pentagon's unclassified global computer network using Internet service providers and dial-in connections that allowed them to hop around the world. It's a very, very difficult security environment when you go through different hosts in different countries and then pop up on the doorstep of Keesler Air Force Base in Mississippi and then go from there into SINGPAC, using the acronym for Commander-in-Chief Pacific. The targets of the network attacks also made it easy. They just were not security aware, said the official. In other words, they were complete morons. A second official found that many military computers, take notes, everybody, many military computers use the word password for their password. Yeah, things haven't changed. And Kevin Mitnick's in prison for over 3 years. Yeah, these guys did far worse than anything he ever did. But of course, they were doing it for purposes of good. A 22-year-old man faces dozens of charges in a case involving the cracking of the computer security codes at top aerospace facilities in the United States, and he doesn't work for the NSA. The Royal Canadian Mounted Police, which conducted a 14-month investigation, say a hacker broke into the computer systems at the National Aeronautics and Space Administration Center. It's just like a rite of passage for any hacker just to break into NASA. Also, the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Association and Hughes STC, an aerospace firm. So that's another person rounded up for being mischievous, I guess. And an addendum to last week's show, where we were talking about GSM being cracked, and that person hasn't been imprisoned yet, I don't think. Bethesda, Maryland-based OmniPoint Corporation said it plans to change the mathematical formulas used in its wireless phone service after two UC Berkeley researchers discovered a way to break the code that protects it. This is after they said that it wasn't a problem. Well, apparently it is a problem. OmniPoint Executive Vice President George Schmidt. You know, last week he was the president. I don't know what happened here. Okay, OmniPoint Executive Vice President George Schmidt said he's going to personalize OmniPoint's formula for identifying phones rather than using the general formulas of the Global System for Mobile Communications, or GSM, Digital Wireless Standard. It's expected that most GSM operators will follow OmniPoint's lead, digital phone services, for which GSM is the world's most popular standard. Give users clearer sound, longer battery life, and greater security. That security lies in the long encrypted digital codes through which the signal is transferred, and which were cracked a couple of weeks ago. Well, Seth is back from London. Now, you've been listening to the show in real audio over there, haven't you?
Yeah, it was really great.
Yeah.
It was really clear. There were no burps. The servers didn't disconnect. It was great. It was good to feel a part of it. I mean, BT is far too expensive to have two telephone lines in there. And
yeah, hopefully people are listening all throughout the world tonight as well. This is our last show for at least 3 weeks, maybe four.
Yeah, they should. I mean, the servers do rather well through Europe.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I've listened in Paris and in Prague, Berlin and Budapest, and I never had a problem. Sometimes there were some problems in Prague because the phone system is...
Are these internet cafes? Or
yeah, there's a great internet cafe in Prague. It actually has its feed from a... via satellite.
Do crowds gather around and they listen to Off the Hook?
They really didn't understand it. You know, they speak Czech, so they didn't...
Right, yeah, that would be a disadvantage, I guess.
By and large, they didn't understand, and it was hard to have to... Well, not hard, but I mean, it took a moment to, like, reconfigure the browser so that I could actually read in English character set versus
Czech character
fonts and stuff like that.
That you have to change.
But it was pretty cool, you know. I mean, they have a T1 via a satellite through, I don't know, I think UUNET is the one who provides the service, but I don't know who actually owns the satellite. And it's a really funky place. They have gold glitter walls and tile floors and trees coming out of ceramic tiles, which are, it's kind of weird, but they serve great coffee.
Okay, that's what matters. Hopefully people are listening to us in internet cafes throughout the world. And feel free to give us a call. Country code 1, area code 516. No, not 516. Where are we? 212. 279-3400. I've been moving around a lot. So actually, I was at the Trenton Computer Show this past weekend, and that was something. That was something. Met a lot of people there. I had no idea how many people were into hacking. I mean, yeah, I sort of had an idea, but these are a lot of, you know, just computer people that are fascinated by the whole thing and aren't really, you know, on the front lines. I mean, I see entire families. We brought some back issues and shirts down there, and They were just thumbing through them all. I mean, I couldn't tell who was more into it, you know, fathers or sons, you know. They were, I mean, I don't know what our audience is anymore, but so many people were just so enthusiastic and met a lot of really, really cool people and saw a lot of, you know, neat machines for sale for really cheap prices. And,
oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, so that was definitely fun, and I'll have to do that again next year. We have a letter from Australia. That's right. Isn't technology great? It allows someone thousands of miles away to be part of a group or listen to a program or add constructive ideas where before they could have done nothing. Like most writers, I have to say I quite enjoy the program and topics covered. I thought I'd write to give you an Australian perspective on things. I'm guessing you don't get too many letters from Australia. Actually, this was a written letter, actually handwritten on a piece of paper that got sent to us, not on the net, which is nice. I like seeing letters like that. I'm not a, quote, hacker, unquote, nor do I really plan to be, but your site is one of my favorites because it gives a different perspective on things and tells me things, I should say informs me about issues which receive very little coverage in the mainstream press. Even if an issue is covered, often basic facts are wrong or the person reporting does not understand the issue. Things are the same all around the world, aren't they? Over Christmas, I spent most of my time listening to Beyond Hope. We have the panels up on the net, so you can listen to them in real audio format. Very interesting. I love the social engineering session, particularly the call to Kmart. I'm trying to find out if major Sydney stores have similar PA systems. It appears that Australia is about to become victim to AOL. Oh, boy. Recently, an ad appeared for a free 2-month trial subscription with them, so I figure they'll launch in about 6 months. One thing that will please you, though, is the fact that an Australian has already registered the address AOL.com.au. AOL must have paid a substantial sum to get it from him. Oh, they got it. Oh, that's too bad. AOL competitors were also interested in it for obvious reasons. I've been trying to tell as many people as possible to be wary of them. In Australia, ISP fees range from between $25 and $40 a month. Cable connections cost around $120 a month, and it's not very, very good at the moment. Most experts say that people who need the speed should stick with ISDN because cable is too expensive. One ISP is advertising $500 for a lifetime connection. I'm very skeptical, though. I think they'll take the $500 and leave. Australia's telecommunications system is being deregulated. Presently, the telecom monopoly is slowly being eroded. Telstra is the old telecom and is slowly being privatized. Unfortunately, Telstra's level of service sounds just like that in America. Recently, complaints have increased dramatically. Phone calls cost around 25 cents, public phones 40 cents. Timed local calls in Australia are illegal. Optus, a new competitor, wants to charge 20 cents per call, but Telstra will not sell access for less than this, even though Optus argues that they can afford to sell access at 12 cents a call. Long-distance charges have fallen dramatically with competition. Interstate calls after 7 p.m. now cost $3 for unlimited time. Only in the last 6 months has caller ID come in, and awareness is not very high. Many people are unaware that companies now know their phone numbers. I'm not sure how big the hacker freaker community in Australia is, but I figure the percentage of computer users who are hackers is similar to the U.S. It's a tragedy to read of Kevin Mitnick's plight. I think I'll write him a letter, which is always a good idea to do. Recently, an Australian hacker got 3 years for the theft of credit card numbers from an ISP. Like America, Australian press doesn't distinguish between hackers and computer criminals. There was an article recently about a group who were using music artists' songs without permission and making their own mixes, recording it, and selling it on the Internet. Since computers were involved, these people were called hackers. I'm no expert, but I don't think they were hackers. It annoys me when people comment on issues of which they are not fully informed about or have a poor understanding of. My mother, age 48, took her first Internet training last week. I gave her the 2600 and Kevin Mitnick site addresses, a good introduction to the Internet. I also managed to get my grandmother, age 84, to start a computer course. Now I'm trying to get her onto the Internet. That's an 84-year-old hacker. That letter comes from Gavin of Caringbah, Australia. And we've got a lot of letters this week for some reason. Got a letter from Argentina, whole other part of the world. And it's going to be a very small bit of this. The other day I was able to hear your radio show for the first time from the 2600.com archives. It was a rather strange thing. Let me tell you, the Internet, it's such a strange and wonderful thing. In that program, you talked with yourself in the future, which was also interesting. And now you have this letter with a photo from the past. Yeah, they sent me a photo of myself from the past, which is kind of scary. And various other things going on in Argentina as well. If you want to write to us, Off the Hook, care of WBAI, 505 8th Avenue, New York, New York, 10018. If you're too lazy to actually write something on a piece of paper, then send us email, OTH at 2600.com. We'll be taking phone calls in just a moment, but before we do, I want to share something that happened over the weekend. This is it's kind of scary, actually, because I don't understand it. And when I don't understand something, it's troublesome. Let's get us a dial tone here. Okay, we're going to give a call to a special number and check into something. Because this is something I think that affects everybody. Let's turn down the music here so we can actually... What we're going to be doing is accessing a special voicemail account.
Yeah, leave a message.
Yeah, that's
please
that's
enter
the voice.
Your password.
Okay, here we go. Oops, don't want to give out too many digits over the air. All right, and hopefully that's it.
You have three messages. Three are saved. To listen to your messages, press 1.
Okay, we're going to listen to these messages. Now, I'd like you to pay special attention to the phone numbers on the messages, because there really aren't any messages. They're just silence. But listen to these phone numbers.
Saved messages. Monday, 4:44 p.m. Telephone number 202-456-1698.
Yeah, you're right.
That to was, erase this message...
That is the White House.
To reply, press 8.
Well, we can't really reply. Message, I don't know why they even give you that option. Let's skip to the next message.
To erase this message, press 7. To reply, press
nobody
8.
Knows.
To skip to the next message, press pound.
Okay. Listen to this one now.
Saved message, Monday, 9:07 p.m. Telephone number 7100824100.
Now, you can't have a phone number beginning with a zero.
This message, press 7.
And besides,
press 8.
The 710 area code?
Press pound.
All right, listen to this next one. This is the last one.
Saved message, Sunday, 2:07 a.m. Telephone number, 7106274387.
Now, that number translates to 710-NCS-GETS, which is something we've talked about in the past. It's the emergency telecommunications system that the federal government has set up for all kinds of disasters. I'll read you a little bit of a pamphlet that they put out. Economic pressures and technological advances have made telephone services increasingly more vulnerable to disruption by natural or man-made disasters. Recent events have shown that fires, power failures, fiber cable cuts, and software problems can cripple the telephone services of entire regions. Congestion in the public switch networks, such as the well-documented Mother's Day phenomenon, can also prevent circuits from being accessed. GETS is designed and maintained in a constant state of readiness to make maximum use of all available telephone resources should outages occur during an emergency, crisis, or war. Yes. GETS uses three types of networks, and they go into all kinds of technical detail here, which if you read the latest 2600, you'll see all this printed in full detail. But basically, you're supposed to call into this number and enter, I guess, your PIN. You know, some sort of a code to signal that you're who you're supposed to be. Now, how is it that on my voicemail, I'm getting calls from the 710 area? It's kind of scary. It's also kind of scary that I'm getting calls from the White House, but we'll deal with that later. That just came in now. So somebody's playing games with something. They've either figured out a way to send fake numbers on caller ID, or they've actually managed to crack the 710 system. Now, let us see just what's involved in cracking the 710 system, the NCS GETS number. What we're going to do, it's interesting because I've learned this over the weekend because I was experimenting with it myself. There are three different long-distance carriers that you can use to get to this thing, and every single one that you use will get you something different. Let's first listen to AT&T. We're going to use the AT&T carrier access code and then dial 1710-NCS-GETS. Listen to what we hear. Strange little tone.
Please enter your destination number now.
I have no idea what a destination number is. Probably it's the phone number you're calling. I guess that's our second chance.
Please re-enter your PIN now.
Okay, now they're calling it a PIN. So either they didn't hear the first one and didn't care.
Please re-enter your PIN now.
Okay, I'm going to continue to refuse to enter my PIN. Let's see what happens.
Your call cannot be completed as dialed. Please check the number and dial again. 1203.
Okay, so no hope of getting an actual human being. Now, if you go through Sprint, you get something completely different. However, for some reason, listen to what happens when we try to go through Sprint. We're dialing the same exact phone number, except we're using the Sprint carrier access code.
Your long-distance service has been temporarily discontinued.
Oh, well, so we can't use Sprint, and that's too bad because I think they're the most entertaining. But, fortunately, MCI also offers this service. Now, keep in mind that this is supposed to be for, I believe, military, federal government employee types. So this person who we wind up talking to is going to think we're one of them. Let's see how much information we can get as far as just, you know, how long the PIN is, for one thing. Okay, that was them. That's their dial tone. Same number, different sound.
May I have your card number, please?
Okay. I have a 14-digit code here. I've got a 7-digit code here.
Let's try the 14-digit.
Okay, it's a 14-digit. Is this the same as my Sprint card? Because that's a 14-digit card, too.
No, I don't think the Sprint card will work.
Okay, because they told me this was run by Sprint. Is this Sprint?
No, this is MCI.
Oh, boy. I'm completely confused by this whole system. This is the first time I've ever actually used it. I give you a 14-digit PIN, and that's what you need right now. See, this is a Sprint card I'm looking at.
Well, I would have to use a different kind of card then.
Okay, so I need to get the MCI version of that code. Is that right?
You were saying you had another number you could give me.
I have a 7-digit number.
Okay, tell me that number and I'll see what comes up.
Okay, that would be 279-3400.
Okay, there's no additional numbers.
I don't know for sure that that's the number that I'm supposed to be using for this. You see, there's a code to get into the compound, there's a code to get into my office, there's a code to do just about everything around here now, and I don't know which code is for which.
Okay, on that card, does it have a different number anywhere?
No, you see, this is just something that's written down on a piece of paper. That's the whole problem.
Probably you need to dial the right 800 number to use this 7-digit card number.
Right. Oh, for that 7-digit. So this would not be a 7-digit number, in other words.
No, I'm in a different department.
Uh-huh.
So it's not going to come up.
Okay. I have the code someplace around here. It's just I'm a slob and I don't know exactly which one is is which.
But it takes an 800 number to get you in the right department to use the different cards.
Okay, so you're saying I have to dial an 800 number now.
Right. Then, the only thing I don't have any 800 numbers to give you to get you into the right department, but for the Sprint card, you usually dial 103330, and that'll get you into a Sprint operator.
Yeah, I know how to use that. It's just,
okay.
This is the 710 service. The 710 NCS GET service, right?
Yes.
That's the one I'm trying to use right now. It's just I'm not sure which of these codes is the right one to use for that service.
Well, I have a 14-digit slot here to put, so I'll try any number you want me to that's about that length.
14-digit slot. Okay. Well, you see, I don't think it's my Sprint card. It wouldn't be that, would
it? Okay. Shouldn't be.
Yeah, so I don't really want to give that out. I mean, you know, but
okay.
I'm not generally a non-trusting person, but I just...
Well, I don't have a clue what the numbers go to.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I don't have any way of keeping any numbers. It goes in the computer, and then the call goes through.
You know, are the first 10 digits, would that be my phone number?
Sometimes, yes.
Okay, because then I just would have to find a 4-digit PIN, right?
Right.
Okay, now I'm starting to understand it. I can do this with touch tones, too, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so I would enter my 14-digit PIN when I call up the number, and then at what point do I enter the number I'm calling?
Usually after you dial your 800 number, the computer prompts you as to whether to enter the number you're calling or the card number first.
You mean 710 number, right, not 800?
Yeah, whatever.
Okay, great. Okay, well, let me dig around, and you're here 24 hours, right?
Yes, we are.
Okay, great. Thanks very much for your help.
You're welcome. I can try to put you through to customer service if that would help.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay,
thank you very much. Interesting to see where we wind up. Do not do this at home, by the way. Giving it two more rings. Okay, well, that's about enough of that. But we did find out that it's a 14-digit code, which I think is rather interesting. So it seems like they use a standard way of passing information around, the standard way being 14 digits, which is what MCI, Sprint use. Might be an interesting idea to try a regular MCI calling card or a regular Sprint calling card if you call through the right companies. And who knows? Somebody apparently, and I say this because it's possible something else happened, but somebody apparently figured out a way to get through this system. I think it's our duty to inform the people in charge of this system that maybe it's cracked, you know, or maybe someone is just messing around with caller ID. Let's call that White House number, see who that goes to, and then we'll take some phone calls, 212-279-3400. We'll do this one through AT&T.
You have reached a non-working number. If you need further assistance, please call area code 202-456-1414. Recording number N7.
Wow, that's a that's an official White House recording. Have you heard anything like that before?
I've heard that before.
You have?
No, I haven't.
Oh, okay. Didn't think so. I've never heard that before. I didn't know there were special recordings for the White House, but that was the main White House number they gave out. So apparently that number that called me is just a weird number. Anyway, we'll play around with this some more and let you know what we find out. 212-279-3400. Let's take our first phone call. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, hello. Okay. I'm just curious. Hello?
Yes, you're still on the air.
Yeah, okay. I'm just curious to know what kind of security, say, an Internet user has. Say, if they go on the web, how much information can the other site know about your system? In other words,
okay,
if you download files, do they know who you are, what your address is?
I'm going to give you an address right now, and this is going to answer all of your questions, all right?
Right.
www.anonymizer, that's ANONYMIZER.com, and click on, there's a section there to give information about you. You will be scared to see how much they find out about you just by you visiting them. So just go over there and check it out, and that should answer all your questions. Thanks for calling. Good evening. You're on the air. Speak up, please.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from New York.
New York. Okay, great. And what's on your mind?
Well, I'm going out of the country, and I need a cellular phone that can keep me in touch. I'm going to be in Greece and Turkey.
I would suggest GSM then, right? I mean, that's really the only thing that I think they use over there. And the local...
Short term.
Yeah, well, you might want to just get an OmniPoint phone then and get one of those phones that allow you to, you know, use it both here and over there. Some phones that only work in one country or another.
Well, are you sure that there are phones that let you use it here and there?
Yes, there are. There most definitely are. What you could also just take the SIM out of the back of the phone,
right,
stick it into another phone if you needed to. But there are phones that will work in both areas.
Okay, and that's by OmniPoint.
Yeah, I would. What I would do is give them a call, or you know, drop by one of their stores and ask them about this, because that's supposedly the whole selling point of GSM, is the fact that you can do this. You can go from one country to another.
Hmm.
Let us know how you do that, because you know, while everybody says, well, you're shaking your head. Why are you shaking your head?
A GSM phone here won't work on the GSM network.
Well, no, a standard one won't, but there are phones that I was told this. There are phones that work both. They work on both frequencies, the frequency here and the frequency over there.
I came back and forth a lot. I asked on
I don't think you got the right phone.
No, definitely not.
Yeah. Well, ask around. And, you know, in any event, you can use the little card in the back, and that will work, and a different phone over there. All right, thanks for calling. 212-279-3400. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hi. I called in last week about the kid who sued his school.
Yeah, the band director or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I found out he won $30,000.
$30,000, huh?
From the school board.
Wow. That's...
And his lawyer did it pro bono. So, but he got 15.
Yeah, he'd be kicking himself if he didn't. And just to recap again, for the benefit of the listeners, this is somebody who got suspended from school because he said something nasty about the band director on a webpage or something?
Uh-huh, and he took it down.
Uh-huh.
And then the school board suspended him. And the band director did not do a thing, you know? And the general opinion was, if anyone should do anything, it should be the band director, and I don't think he really cared.
So he took no action himself. It was the school board that did this.
It was all the school board.
Amazing.
And another thing, there's a game called Ultima Online.
Yeah.
And 10 players filed a class action suit against the company because they were complaining about the lag, and they said 24, and Ultima Online said that they could have, you know, 24 hours continuous action.
Mm-hmm.
And all they want is for them to drop the $10 a month fee that they make them pay after buying a $50 product.
Uh-huh.
You know? And I was wondering what you thought about that.
I don't really know enough about it to say much, but it sounds like you have an opinion.
Well, I think that what they did is they had a press release, and they said that all this does is make it harder for us to make games. And I say that's, you know, that's a load.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, if this will help them make better games, because they should think, you know, before releasing a game and having the players beta test the games, because I understand that they already released, like, 10 patches for the game, you know, that supposedly came out, and they made them pay $50 for it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I see the point. That's a problem with a lot of software that people have. So, yeah, that's a good point, definitely.
Okay.
Where are you calling from again?
Cleveland, Ohio.
Okay, great. Thanks for calling.
Okay.
212-279-3400. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hello.
Yes, speak up.
Hey, how are you doing? This is Zaff in Dallas.
How you doing?
I'm good. I'm calling about Ultima Online. That game kind of rubs me the wrong way. It didn't cost me $50 when I purchased it. It was $60.
Uh-huh.
And several of my friends also purchased it because, you know, we like to play games together online, some of my internet friends. And,
it's interesting that in the 10 years or so the show has been on the air, no one has ever talked about this before, and two calls in a row talk about the exact same thing. I just think it's fascinating.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm listening.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, the problem with the game, I don't know anybody or hardly anybody who has played past the first free month. You pay $60 to get the thing. You play for 1 month, and then after that it's $10 a month. But the problem is that the game does not deliver what it claims to deliver.
Mm-hmm.
On the box, it tells you, you know, you're going to have all these cool adventures and all these monsters. And, you know, it's sort of like an online RPG that you play with other people. In reality, you get into the game and there are hardly any monsters. The world has been basically picked clean. And all there is to do is kill other players. Or you can actually get a job. Like, you can be a tailor and make shirts.
Uh-huh.
That's a lot of fun, you know. I have a job.
Oh, wait a minute.
I don't need a fake job as
wait,
a game.
Wait, wait, wait. What kind of game allows you to be a tailor making... How does that work? I just want
to
know how that...
Well, that's the thing. You start out with nothing, and you can do practically nothing, and the first thing you need to do is get a job. You pick a vocation of some sort.
Okay.
And, you know, you can be a blacksmith, you can be a tailor, et cetera.
Can you be whatever you want, or do you have to be certain things?
You can be whatever you want. There's many choices, and, you know.
Can you be a computer hacker for hire?
No, they didn't have those back in the medieval days, unfortunately.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
But, yeah, I mean, it's just basically not fun.
Uh-huh.
And I would caution anyone out there who is considering purchasing Ultima Online to try it at a friend's house or talk to some people on IRC and some of the channels and get some opinions before you invest $60 in it.
Are you sure it's a problem with the game you're having and not a problem with the medieval period? Which, because that was kind of a dull period.
Oh, well, yeah, and I would agree because I'm into technology myself.
Uh-huh.
But the problem is there's just the primary crux of the game is just building up your guy and having a job. There's very little to do in terms of
adventure. Well, that's what mattered to people back then. It was a good, you know, good paying job, you know?
Yeah, well.
That's what people were into.
Yeah, well, I suppose you're right.
Well, those medieval values that exist today, too.
It's, well, you look at something like Diablo. I don't know if you've ever played that.
Mm-hmm.
But that game was really fun. I mean, that game, and it obviously suffered from all the cheating problems. But other than that, it was a really good game, and it was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. You went through, you went through dungeons, you killed monsters, you achieved goals. And on this thing, you're led to believe you get to do those things, but you don't.
I see.
So it's a big disappointment. I was really, you know, sometimes you buy a game and you like it, sometimes you buy it and you're kind of so-so, and sometimes you really wish you didn't.
Right.
And that's one of those titles.
Yeah, and sometimes...
Pretty strong feelings about UO.
Sometimes people just, you know, copy the game and check it out to see if it's what they want to buy.
Well, you couldn't do that with UO.
Right.
Because it has a serial number, and when you purchase it, you put the serial number in and you log in and get an account on their website.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, it's a great system for combating piracy, and, you know, hats off to them for that, because it's probably the only game I've ever seen that has not been wares.
Right.
But, unfortunately, that also means you don't get to see that it sucks before you buy it.
Well, word gets out in other ways, and
yeah.
I imagine people won't be buying it as much.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Doom probably did better, or Myst will certainly do better, you know, or, you know, a lot of the games that are available on the net anyway.
Sure.
Probably will do better financially than something like this that gets bad reviews.
Sure.
Assuming
no
it gets bad reviews
it.
From other people as well.
Oh, yeah. If you do some web searches or Usenet searches, you'll just see people complaining left and right about the game. And the reason that it really rubs people so badly is that it could be something really neat.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it has enormous potential. It's a fascinating concept. I mean, a world filled with, you know, literally thousands of other players all live.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a really neat idea, but it's just such a flawed execution, and, you know, there's not anything to do in this world.
Well, I mean, the main problem I have with most of these games is that they're basically, you know, the graphics change a little bit, the characters change a little bit, but basically, you're running around shooting a gun at a monster and,
oh,
know,
yeah.
doing well, little flips and things like that.
You're it's talking like, about all the Quake-flavored games.
Well, you know, every game seems to be basically that. And,
yeah.
you know, I realize some people's lives are basically that, but, you know, not everybody. Not everybody. And you know, even a game, like, where you get on the New York City subway and just, like, explore different stations because they've all been cataloged somehow. Or you drive on a freeway and actually go places, you know, and have little mini-adventures in the various towns you go to. That would be interesting to me. Maybe it won't be interesting to anybody else, but I'm just tired of all the games where you have to just, you know, shoot the monster and eventually die yourself because you can't shoot the super monster.
I totally agree. I completely agree. It's been a long time since there's been any real innovation in the game industry.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you look back at Pac-Man and Donkey Kong days, you had a ton of games, and almost every one that came out was a totally different concept than the other.
Right, and people still play those today.
Sure, they're terrific games. I mean, they've got the arcade emulators where you can play them now on your PC.
Right.
And they're terrific, but... You look at the new games, and, you know, we had, like, the Mario era, where everything was a platform game.
Right.
And now we've got the Doom and Quake era, where everything is a 3D maze, push the button, shoot the monster game.
Yeah, I mean, the 3D thing could be good.
Except yeah.
Why
well,
do you always have to be shooting a monster? There must be something else you can think of to do in a maze.
I totally agree. I would love to see somebody take that to another level. And, you know, the 3D engine is great. We love the ability to explore, you know, a place like that. But let's do something with it. Like, an RPG of that sort would be really neat.
Uh-huh. Okay, let's hope somebody is inspired to do something. Thanks very much for calling.
Hey, you're welcome.
Take care.
Bye.
Calls from Cleveland and Dallas. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Speak up, please.
Yeah.
Yeah, where are you calling from?
Long Island.
Long Island. Great. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I just wanted to know. I was just asking about this. You pressed 311.
You got to sort of turn down your volume though, because you're gonna get very confused hearing me twice.
Yeah. Hello.
Okay. Not to mention what it does to me. Okay. Always keep the radio near the phone, too. That way you don't have to go on a long trip.
Yeah, I know. Is there a delay between the
Yes, there's a delay, and if you're on the net, it's a super delay. But regardless, what about 311?
All right. When you press 311 on the telephone line...
You get this weird beeping noise.
Yeah, I just want to know what it is.
That's a teletype device for the hearing impaired, and it hooks you up to the New York State Police, which is something I don't really understand why hearing impaired people need to reach the New York State Police, not the local police. But supposedly that's that's not going to be lasting much longer. 311 is going to be the non-emergency number for the real police, for everybody. Well, except for hearing impaired people, won't be able to hear them, obviously. That's one of Clinton's ideas, is that 311 will be the national standard for non-emergency use, and 911 will be the emergency number. I just think everybody's going to be confused, and a lot of people will be dialing 411 and getting information.
Oh, what a great guy.
Yeah. Okay, thanks for calling.
All right, thanks, no problem.
And that's yet another weird number that we'll have to get used to in the future. Good evening, you're on Off the Hook. You're having audio problems. This person must be calling from a portable phone. Good evening, you're on Off the Hook.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
I have a question for the host of the show.
Okay, well, you're on the air right now, so this would be a good time to ask.
Well, actually, my question is about the Anonymizer, website you told the kid about.
Anonymizer, yes.
Yeah, could you spell that again for me?
I'll spell it again. Okay, ready? The www part is obvious.
Anonymizer.com. Right, and
Anonymizer.com, and if you click on a certain button there, it'll give you
right.
all the information about your.
And do you have a website or an address that I can use to get all this information you talked about tonight?
Which information do you mean?
About the computers, the White House, the voicemail.
There's no one site that contains all that. I mean,
the NCSGETS.
Yeah.
Can you give me the 2600 website?
Well, that's www.2600.com. The information about NCS, I mentioned it was in 2600. It's in the physical magazine 2600. We have some memos that.
Right. And do you know if the federal government, if they offer any directories or anything that I can get this information from?
Well, the federal government does actually give out a lot of information, and most people don't know about it. If you ask around, for instance, what we were doing tonight, calling up that number and just asking some questions, they'll eventually transfer you to a number that may ring a long time, but might get you connected to somebody who has the answers.
Oh.
Okay? All right. Thanks very much for calling. Let's try to squeeze in one more call. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm calling with a question as regards value with cellular phones and the like. I have an OmniPoint phone now, which when I bought it last year was maybe valued at, I guess they started out with like 100 something for it, and then suddenly it ended up being like about $50. It's an Ericsson.
You couldn't get rid of it for about 20 now, I don't think.
Well, what I'm trying to figure out is just to have some sort of like concrete idea of like when I walk into a store and someone is telling me, they're going to sell me a phone for $200.
Uh-huh.
If I'm really getting $200 worth of anything, or is this just, a thing, hey,
well,
if you want.
Well, at the time, you probably are. At the time, this phone could do amazing things that you've never seen before, but within 6 months, every other phone is doing the same thing, and there are more phones that do it better, so obviously it decreases in value, and that's just going to happen.
Huh.
You could always wait, but then the thing is they discontinue making the phones,
yeah.
So you can't get them anyway. It's just something, it's the same thing in the computer industry. Things just come
well.
Way down in price.
I know it well. Second part of my question is
you gotta
that
make
I
it really quick, because we're out of time.
Okay, I have a Mac laptop, and I'm wondering if they have any really decent cellular, but internet phone software that would work well with it.
Oh, yeah, there's all kinds of companies offering things like that.
For Macintosh?
I'm not sure. I'm told that they do. Companies like IDT, I believe, do that, and other companies. Just do a web search for that kind of thing.
Okay, thank you.
And you should
much.
Find quite a lot. Okay, thanks. Thanks so much for calling. We're out of time once again, and in fact, we're out of time for the next. Well, we're not going to be on next week. We're not going to be on the week after that, and they have not told us yet if we're going to do a marathon show the week after that. So it might be a while before we're back. Check our website, www.2600.com/offthehook, one word, and we'll be updating people as to when the next show is there, since we can't do it here, obviously. Until whenever that is, this is Emmanuel Goldstein for Off the Hook. Have a good night.
I hope that's understood.
Spring is here, and the WBAI Spring Membership Drive is starting on Monday, April 27th. Once again, we'll be needing your help answering phones and taking pledges of support for your radio station. If you can spare an hour or more any time between the hours of 7 a.m. and 12 midnight, please come to our studios at 505 8th Avenue on the corner of 35th Street on the 19th floor. Before the drive begins, on Wednesday, April 22nd, we'll be having an orientation and training meeting for volunteers to help prepare you for the drive in advance. So please come to our meeting. We look forward to seeing you here at the station on Wednesday, April 22nd at 5:30 p.m.